Good morning, everybody. Hey, it's a good day to be inside. Yeah? So come on. Let's loosen up a little bit. I know sometimes the cold will make you kind of get a little rigid by the look of your faces, but don't worry about it. Hey, why don't we say hello to everyone, though? If you don't know this, we have multiple locations. So high east, high online TV people, and especially those of you who are warm, it's just good. You should be smiling at me. We as a church are leaning into the Bible in a very specific way. We do this every year. We start the year off looking at a specific word from the Bible and using it to like, okay, help us know you, God. Help us follow you, God. We need your help. And the Bible is such a large book that sometimes it can feel overwhelming. So every year we take a word and we isolate it. This year, I'll show you one, Psalm 27. Psalm 27 says our word of the year. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? If you simply are just like being a part of church because you're desperate for God to encourage you, maybe this is what you needed to hear today. That the Lord is your light. He really is. Like, and you could look at that as maybe you feel like in a dark time, maybe you just feel uncertain about what to do, a decision. The Lord is your light. All throughout Scripture, we see people relying on God, like, I need your help. And God promises and is faithful to over and over, okay, I will be your light. I'm going to be your light. I'm going to be what you actually need me to be. If you study the whole Bible, you'll learn two keywords that will summarize light for you regarding what God does. He is a light that will guide you. This is what many of us, when we talk to God, we're like, please, like, give me the right answer. Show me the right place, which job to take, where to move, how to say this to that person, how do I wrestle with this complexity that I've got in my life. And you're asking God, you want God. Most of us right now at least have one conversation with God as of late. God, will you shine some light on my path? And he's like, yeah. So we learn that it's a light to actually show you where to go, what to do. But then there's that give one. You and I are to give. So summary, we need light. You know that. We need light. That was the first sermon we talked about. We need light. We need light. We need light. We need light. If I turn the lights out on you, you'd be like, we need light. We need light, yeah. And so does the person next to you. That's how we get into the give part. The person next to you, whether you know them, frankly, whether you like them, they need as much light as you do. They are a person that is likely having similar conversations with God or wondering things about God. You have a role. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, is to not just be like, God, show me what I'm supposed to do. You're supposed to actually reflect this out. Let me show you something that Jesus said that is where we get this from. Matthew chapter 5. You are the light of the world. You are. Not that you've earned this, but you are. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. I mean, this is Jesus going, you are the light of the world. And if you were a part of the first sermon, he said, he's the light of the world. And if you're like, I'm confused now. Who's the light of the world? And he's like, his answer to you would be like, yes, which is annoying. And see, he's the light of the world, but you and I are called to be Christ-like. You and I are called to reflect the image of God that we're made in. So this is why he's like, yes, he's the light of the world, but he is challenging a group of people who aren't even sure what they believe about him. Think about his audience. This is like the classic, most popular sermon that Jesus has ever preached. So he's talking to, for lack of better words, a mixed group of people who are, some are slightly intrigued, some are skeptical, some are all in. And he says, you are the light of the world. And then he draws this, a bit of a visual picture for them. If you go to Israel, you can go to the Sea of Galilee, be on the water, and you're surrounded by what we call kind of mountainside, hillside. And during the day, you can't really see much. It all blends in. The cities on the hills, they blend in because, well, it's just the way the topography and how everything looks. But at night, if you're on that body of water and you look at the hillsides, guess what can't hide is the city that's on that hill. That's what Jesus is helping them understand, hopefully helping you understand. So then he says this, verse 16, in the same way, let your light shine before others. My fellow South Dakotans, this is tough for us. We're like, but we must do good in secret. No one can see or know. It's South Dakota speak. So we have a problem with this. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. You got to read the whole verse and understand what he's saying. They are not to see your good works so they think you're absolutely amazing, which you are absolutely amazing. That's not the goal, is that you do something good in someone's life so that they like you. That's called political correctness. That's called people pleasing. When you do good or say something in such a way that you're actually trying to get yourself like in some good footing with them. Now, this says that you and I are supposed to be a light in other people's lives so that they don't see us, they see God. That they are actually amazed by God because maybe, for instance, it's because they're like, wow, I can't believe that happened through you. That's awesome. And you're able to say, it's God. That's why some of you get annoyed, but I'm loving it. All these athletes, when they get interviewed, they get asked the question that, and they don't even answer the question. I love it. I love it. I love it. So how'd you do on that pass? Let me just tell you, all glory to God. And you can see the reporter going, I didn't ask that. And some of you get annoyed by this. You're like, you know what? You should live that out. They are living it out. They're reflecting the glory of God. They're going, I refuse to take the glory of God. That's what they're saying. It's pretty cool. We are called to be a light where we are. And Jesus, I think, wants to bring that up with you and I. Where you are right now, what you're doing in your circle, it's not always about something far away. Where you are in your home. Do you remember that verse that we talked about? Like where you are supposed to shine so the people in the house can see? You want to know one of the greatest things you could ever do with the rest of your life? Be a light in your own home. If you want to know what's broken down in our society, a lot of us like to like talk about and think about and just dwell on the government, 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 while we neglect our own homes. Just right there, it said, be a light in your own home. And we struggle with this. Here's our challenge, is that you and I are choosing regularly to be visible or invisible light. Thanks to technology, we can do this. This is just fun. I've already done this 10 times. It's just, I don't know what it is, but it feels very good. You are the light of the world. According to Jesus, you are the light of the world. Here's our problem, is there are environments where being the light is awesome, fun, fulfilling, exhilarating, just emotionally stimulating, and just is fantastic. But then there are moments where being the light, you're like, they might say something, or it might be complicated. So I grew up, and you know, we learned songs about not hiding our light under a bushel. No, there's a song. So some of us are like, I'm a church, gonna be a light. Yeah, I agree with what pastor's saying. It says it in the Bible, but then we go to work, and we're not near the light that we said we would be in the seats that we're sitting in right now. Or maybe it's this. You're like, you know what? I'm praying to God that one day you might be single and you want to be married. And you're like, I want to be the light. I'm going to be the light. But then you find yourself alone with that special person. And you're like, you know, it's kind of inconvenient right now to be the light. Or let's talk tax season. No. I mean, you understand the temptations, right? And you know this. I know this. We've had this since we were kids. Where we're like, yes. And then we have this moment where we're like, yeah, but not right now. And they call it Sunday Christians, which is kind of an oxymoron. But it's where you and I are on Sundays or whatever day we go to church. We're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then some situation has us. And this is why Jesus said, who does that? Jesus is like, what's the point in having and being the light and doing this. And you and I have this constant visible, invisible issue. And we need help. We need other people pulling that light out of us. My parents, from an early age, worked on making sure they knew that I was a light. And they didn't do it necessarily by sitting me down and looking me in the face and saying, David, you better believe you're the stinking light. Let me give you some examples. On Sundays, we would go to church because, well, my dad was the pastor, right? So we had to. But anyways, we would go to the church. But we did something as a kid that I didn't know what was going on at the time, but began to learn what was going on. And now as an adult, I think it's pretty amazing. We often would head to the church, but we would stop before we got to the church. My mom would be driving because dad's already at the church, and we would stop at this apartment complex. And I was like, this is not the church, Mom. And we would sit there and wait, and a woman named Shirley would come out of the front door of that apartment complex, get into the car, and we would take her to church. Saying, okay. We would do that week after week after week. Shirley couldn't drive. She had no way of getting to church. And what I learned growing up is my mom said, this is what we do. We don't just go to church. There's a light thing going on. As a kid, I was learning that one of my roles in life was to help go be a light in someone's life that can't actually get access to church. It was pretty cool. My parents would tell me, hey, we don't care what you do with your life, which at first you're like, I think you're supposed to. But my parents would say, they would continue, like, no, we don't care what you do with your life as long as this is what you do with the rest of your life. It doesn't matter what vocation you have, right? Like, my parents raised me, like, go be a light wherever you are. Then I would begin to just experience other things, other people in my life. I was a part of our kids' ministry as a kid, and our kids' pastor, I was a kid in the kids ministry, came and grabbed me and said, hey, I need your help. I need you to start serving in the kids ministry. And I'm like, but I'm a kid. And she's like, exactly. That's why you should be serving in the kids ministry. And so I started serving in the kids ministry and was not very good at it at all. But I was learning that I didn't just go to church and things like that just to soak up. It was to be a light. Our kids pastor would gather some of us up during the week. I don't even remember how often. I'll just never forget this. But she says, hey, we're going to go visit some of the kids that came to church for the first time, and we're going to deliver them cookies. She had me at cookies. I'm like, cookies. Can I have some of the cookies? And so I went, not knowing really what was going on other than there was cookies involved, and I might get some. And so we're in a church van. We pull up to this house that I don't know who lived, and my kids pastor looks at me, David, take this bag of cookies to the front door, knock on the front door, and give them to the kid that has visited our church last week for the first time. I said, okay. So I went, did that time after time after time being taught. You know what the best version of life is? To go give light. The amount of joy I got, I can't express it to you, but the amount of impact I would watch every kid that we would show up there, typically even as a group of kids, show up and be like, hey, we were glad that you came. The amount of joy we saw in that kid's life was absolutely amazing. Then I grew up and was in the student ministry, the youth ministry. My youth pastor came to me and said, David, see that kid over there? I said, yep, don't know him. He says, he doesn't have any friends. I was like, that stinks. I'm going to go hang out with these girls over here. He says, no, you're not. I want you to go over to that. It was in a gym. He goes, I want you to go shoot baskets with that kid. You just need to know. I wasn't like, oh, good. No, it was like, oh, man, okay. And I went and shot baskets with that kid. My youth pastor over and over and over would put me in situations I didn't want to be in, saying, go be the light, David. See, these are just some examples. In fact, I would tell you, and this is why this is not like some ploy because of some desperation. I think we can change the trajectory of a generation if you and I would realize the impact we can have on the next generation. If you and I would realize that it's not about, do you love being around preschool kids screaming in your face? Do you know that you're called to be the light of the world? You and I sometimes get so specialized in how we're going to serve others, what we're going to do for them. We begin to navigate, do I know how to do this well? Am I an expert? Do I want to do that? And Jesus just said, you are the light of the world. Don't you dare do this. That's what he said, in summary. And you're going to face adversity. In fact, I want to talk to you about a couple things that I think is getting in your way. It gets in my way, it gets in your way. Two main things. Acts chapter 13 reveals a little bit of this. On the next Sabbath, almost the whole city gathered to hear the word of the Lord. Paul and his crew are being the light. They're sharing the gospel. When the Jews saw the crowds, they were filled with jealousy. They began to contradict what Paul was saying and heaped abuse on him. Paul, in the story, is sharing the good news of Jesus. He's being the light. And you see the reaction, heaping abuse on him. I mean, that's language for not going well. That's language for no one's listening to you. But then watch, because this is pretty neat. Then Paul and Barnabas answered them boldly, We had to speak the word of God to you first. Since you reject it and do not consider yourselves worthy of eternal life, we now turn to the Gentiles. For this is what the Lord has commanded us. Keyword commanded. I have made you a light for the Gentiles that you may bring salvation to the ends of the earth. We are called to be a light where we are, and it's going to get difficult. You know that, right? It's tough. There's a reason not to get into your business, but to get into your business. There's a reason why every single person who can hear me right now is doing this at different moments. Now, this is a different thing for all of us. There's a reason that you and I are using as an excuse to not be the light where we're supposed to be the light. So Jesus said, let me teach you how to be the light. Mark 12, one of the most popular places in the Bible. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. He just taught you how to be the light. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. If you don't read in between the lines, he just told you what's getting in your way of being the light. Here's what he just said. He said, be undivided. And when you are divided internally, when you have like this, I want to do this, but I'm going to do this. When you and I face this division in our souls and our minds, it's where we have a tendency to start doing this because we're divided. We begin to think what others are going to think, what's the consequences, what's the financial ramifications of this, and we get divided. So that's why he says, love God with everything you've got. If you summarize it, love God in an undivided way and love others in an undivided way. One of the ways to think about this is what goes on in your life when no one sees you. We use words like your private life or integrity. And what I would tell you is integrity is one of the best ways to shine light where you are undivided. Do you know one of the greatest gifts you could ever give your children if you're ever going to be a parent? Undivided. If you're a boss, if you want to know like how do you lead a business? Undivided. If you ever thought about what's the secret to marriage, I will tell you, be undivided. When you see that person and you talk to that person, when you're with that person and when you're not, if you can learn to be the same person everywhere all the time, undivided, it is one of the greatest gifts you could ever give another human being, is integrity. That's why you and I don't like politics, or we don't always trust politicians. Right? Here, let's make it real personal. Whether you've thought about this or not, one of the things that you most desperately want from me specifically, is you're hoping I'm the same person here as I am at home. You're hoping I have integrity. It reveals to you how powerful having integrity is. And I'm going to tell you, if you don't currently have integrity, your light is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Now, here's how the Bible helps us understand how to fight this if you don't. If you right now you're going, oh, no, I feel like he's staring at me. I'm not. 1 John chapter 2, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. Now, when I read that, I'm like, that's a lot of words there. Could you help me? Yes, I can. Let me show you that in summary. That just brought up lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. Here's what I would contend. If you're ever going to compromise your integrity, you're going to compromise it in one or more of these. Lust of the flesh, the desires of your body. Your body is going to be craving something that you're going to have to go, am I divided? You're going to know what God says to do with your body, but then you're going to have this desire that will say, yeah, but do this. Your body will crave things. It just, we're born with cravings. You need to know the devil loves to tempt you based on whatever your body craves. The eyes, lust of the eyes, desire for what you don't have. Oh my. We should just call that being an American. Like, or what social media has done is it's pulled us into this, like, this vacuum of constantly looking at other people's lives going, do I want that? I think I want that, whatever that is. So you understand that you and I are battling over and over and over and over this lust of the eyes, looking for things we don't have that we want. And then this last one, that pride of life, we're like, again, we're South Dakotans, we don't do that. Desire for honor and applause. Yes, you and I do wrestle with this. If you struggle with low self-esteem, one of the indicators that where that really hurts is you begin to crave validation at a level that you shouldn't be craving it. And when you begin to crave validation over and over, you begin to be desperate for honor, for applause, for acknowledgement. Do you know what the devil can do with that? He can help you get into a toxic relationship. He can help you compromise things privately. He can help you become a people pleaser. See, he's not helping you, but that's what he's going to do. In fact, if you look at these three things, one of the ways, don't like raise your hand, or I want you to process in this. Think about this. Where are you currently most dissatisfied in life? Don't answer out loud. Every one of us, because we're human beings, and the devil tempts us, there's an area that you're just not satisfied. It's not going the way that you want it to go. So here's what you do, is wherever you're most dissatisfied, you need to know that the devil's trying to figure that out so he can tempt you there. And do you know why he wants to tempt you there? So that he can get you to do that. Sometimes we think it's bigger than that. I think it's because he wants your light to stop shining. If you don't know this, you and I wrestle with this over and over. It's a private battle that we never tell others about. I read a story I thought was interesting because I think we're all facing this. There's a story, 1978, Marie and Edith, you don't know who they are. Marie and Edith in 1978 started a business, leaders of the business, owners of the business. And what was rare back in the 70s is actually a lot of times it was almost frowned upon or thought it was weird that women would start a business like this. See, they started an auto parts business. They were like the only ones that owned this auto parts business. Like, women didn't typically get into the auto parts industry and specifically become a wholesaler of auto parts. So Marie and Edith were like, okay, we have a challenge because if we're going to become the company that we want to become, we got to figure out how to do this. According to them and many others, even the auto parts industry was super toxic, where the only way to actually get ahead was to cheat people, pressure people, and lie to people. And Marie and Edith were like, and we're women, oh no, how do we do this? So they decided, let's do it the opposite. Let's have integrity. Let's just be a company that has integrity. So they decided they would make rules that their sales people were not allowed to pressure people. Like, they got in trouble if they pressured people. And then a classic, like, you weren't allowed to lie. You're like, well, that's good, I know. But they weren't allowed to lie. One of their values they had up on their walls is this: right actions lead to right results, wrong action leads to wrong results. It was not normal for anyone in the auto parts industry to value things like this. So these ladies start this business, all odds against them. Do you know they still exist? Wetherill is the name of their company. They bring in hundreds of millions of dollars, profit tens of millions of dollars. And what they would credit is they chose to be the same people the entire time. integrity. If you're divided, your light is covered. If right now you have hidden sin, if right now you are lying, betraying, and generating secrets, I'm not here to shame you. I'm begging of you to get it into the light. And some of you just tune me out. You're like, David, if I get it into the light, I will lose so much. And I would say you are losing so much right now. You just don't see it, and the devil has you tricked. One of the worst regrets you would ever have is to somehow look back on your life and realize you didn't show the light that you should have been showing, that you could have shown if you just put it in light. One of the greatest lies the devil tells us is he gets us into the trap, which we're like, yeah, that's the big lie. No, the big lie is now you can't tell anybody. And when Jesus would say, love the Lord your God with everything, and you can't do that like this. So the lesson is be undivided. But that's not the only lesson. Because some of us are like, this is my favorite sermon. I'm nailing this. This is awesome. Good. Be undivided. Be involved. That's what that verse said. Be undivided. Be involved. Matthew 5:16. Let me take you back and you're going to start seeing words. In the same way, let your light, let. I emphasize the word let just to help us all. Let. You know what that means? That means that you cannot let. That's English for us. It says let, which means you have a choice that you are the light, but you have to make some sort of action behind this. You have to let the light shine. Here, being involved challenge. Good intentions. We all know people with good intentions. This is the annoying part about apologies nowadays, where someone will say, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. And you're like, well, if you meant to, you're dark, right? Like, come on. Like, let's get beyond the why I didn't mean to. Sometimes we now think that that's like the past. Like, if I tell you, I didn't intend for that to be that bad or to go that wrong or for that to hurt you that bad. That was not my intention. We often say that as though because I had good intentions, everything should be okay. Really? Matthew 5:16. Let your light shine that they may see. That they may see. Let me make a super deep theological observation here. People don't see intentions, they see action. They don't see that you intended. They just are watching your actions. People don't see good intentions. So, let's do this. Matthew 5:16 leads us to 1 Peter 4:8-10. Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. So love, we got that. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others. To serve others. I mean, I can read you verse after verse after verse, but I think you don't need more. That you and I are not supposed to just simply offer each other good intentions and excuses. We're actually supposed to offer each other hospitality. Hospitality. Without grumbling. If you could just be in our home around dinner time, and we have the debate every single night, even though it's on a chore chart. Who's got dishes tonight? And every kid always looks at us, oh, I don't know. So I walk over to the fridge, say, yep, it's still here. The chore chart, right? You and I have a tendency to be hospitable and grumble, at least internally. I shouldn't have to do this. We're supposed to be hospitable and to serve others without grumbling. Now, here's what you might be missing. I don't know if you're missing it. I don't want you to miss it. This last part. As faithful stewards of God's grace.
Let me teach you how to read the Bible. I say this all the time. Sometimes you got to read it backwards. If you want to, you know what stewardship means? Stewardship means you're refusing to waste what is in your hands. Okay? That's what stewardship means. Basic stewardship, meaning I've got something, whatever it is, time, talent, treasure, whatever, I've got it in my hands. And to be a good steward is to refuse to waste it. As faithful stewards of God's grace, we're supposed to offer hospitality and serve each other. Giving light is refusing to waste God's grace. If you need me to be more mean about this, I can. But I don't, when you refuse to serve other people, you are wasting the grace God has given you. Many of us treat this as though it's optional, like this elective course that maybe we might take if we've got time and stuff like that. Where God's saying, no, he's given you and I grace. And you're like, what do I do with this grace? You don't earn your salvation. This is not an earned salvation talk. No, you don't earn it. You steward the grace that God has given you. How do you refuse to waste the grace? You get involved in other people's lives, and you are hospitable without grumbling, serving them like crazy so that they might have the light in their life. That's what you're doing. You're managing, stewarding your grace. And frankly, if you're like me, I have days that I waste the grace that God's given me. Because I don't have time. That's like the classic excuse nowadays. I don't have time. I don't have time to serve others. If you read some history in the 1600s, a guy named, he's the king of Siam. You're like, I don't know. I don't understand. He would regularly give gifts to his enemies. Let me show you what that gift would look like. He would regularly give a white elephant to his enemies. You're like, what a nice guy. No. These were alive, by the way. He didn't give them pictures. He gave them real, known as like albino elephants. They would just be there, and all of a sudden, 10 white elephants show up at the front door, and they got these big, giant elephants. Now, here's the kicker. In their society, this elephant was seen as holy and super valuable, meaning you couldn't ever hurt it. In fact, if anyone ever gave you a white elephant, you had to take it home and take care of it for the rest of its life. Some of you are like, this sounds so, you love animals. Yeah, but you and I have never taken care of an elephant. I don't think most of us ever have. So if you had a white elephant, you had to wash it daily, feed it. I don't know what those elephants eat, but I think it might be a lot. I know when the food comes out, that's a lot of cleaning. But you can't let the white elephant be around its business. You got it? So it actually would exhaust the resources, both human resources and financial resources, of his enemy. So that's why he's like, if he got an enemy, he sent him 10 white elephants and was like, because they can't do anything. They can't kill it because that's like sacrilegious. They can't give it away because it meant that they didn't appreciate it. He knew what he was doing. And the devil's doing the same thing to you and I. Sliding white elephants into our lives, going, now you have to take care of that, ha ha. So you and I will buy things that demand our time. You and I will commit to things that demand our time. You and I don't think, have a time problem. We have a white elephant problem. And perhaps one of the reasons that you're not shining light because you're like, I don't have time. And what I would tell you is, you go talk to that white elephant and you say, you need to move on. You have a light to give. Jesus said, you will not, he didn't say you will earn to be the light. He didn't say one day you'll have enough information. He didn't say one day you'll know enough of the Bible. He looked at a group of people and said, you are the light of the world. Your choice is this or this. And it has everything to do with what you're doing with grace. This is why I like to give. undivided and involved. Let me show you this. Do you know the people getting baptized today? You know what they're doing? They're saying, I'm undivided. That's what they're saying. They're saying, I love the Lord, my God, with everything I've got. I love them passionately. They will not be perfect. They will screw up at times. But what they're saying is, I am so in love with God that I will publicly, in front of people I don't know, declare in front of them that they love Jesus. It's so epic. It's one of these moments that I think sometimes we're like, yeah, people get baptized at Fountain Springs all the time. Never get bored with it. If you get bored with baptism, you have a spiritual problem. Because what you're witnessing is person after person after person saying, in a world full of divided people, saying, I declare that I am a follower of Jesus Christ, and I am saying so in front of you. That is the ultimate act of I am undivided. Some of you, you should get baptized today. You didn't come signed up, but who cares? Perhaps this is God knocking on your skull going, you say you're undivided, but you've never actually publicly declared that. Maybe you did as a baby, and that's fine, but you're a grown-up now. I challenge you. Look at what's going on in your life. Are you undivided, and are you involved in what God is doing? Answer those two questions, and you will answer, are you a light or not around you?